You want Black Friday prices without the Black Friday crowds. Lowe's gets it. We checked the calendar, and Christmas is coming early. $99 is all you need to grab your favorite select 7-foot pre-lit artificial Christmas tree for the holiday season. And don't sweat what gifts to get Dad, because we've got up to 40% off select tools and accessories. That's how Lowe's celebrates Black Friday early. Selection varies by location while supplies last.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
Welcome to part two of our conversation with Ronald Cavall about inside the Overbrook Insane Asylum. Have you almost, having that many years of experience where this almost became a norm of some sort, did that today, or is it, obviously you don't work there anymore, the place is gone, but today, should something like that happen to you, is it more just like, yep, that happens, or is it still that same shock and amazement that it was, you know, from those days?
No, nothing can shock me anymore. I have, where we live now in North Carolina, mm-hmm. and the house we have, I kept on telling my wife, I said, after watching TV at night, I look over in the corridor and I keep on spotting somebody. And I said, there's somebody over there. And I keep on, she said, well, maybe it's a light, maybe it's this. I said, no, it's not the light. It's not the light. Because every time I just turn, I look slowly, I stare there. And when I turn my head fully, it goes, mm-hmm. you know? And I'm not afraid anymore. And then I look and I go like this. So I don't know what it is. I'm trying to piece it together. I'm trying to think possibly it could be, believe it or not, I think it could be my brother.
Okay.
Because my brother, when he died, he was in a bad way. Mm-hmm. And I have three other brothers. They threw this on me. Mm-hmm. Okay? Well, two other brothers, rather. They threw this on me. Oh, well, you know, Bob died. You take care of it. I said, thanks a lot. You know?
Yeah.
And so, because they know who I am, I would do it. So,
yeah, yeah.
I was in Arizona. I paid for him to be picked up at the hospital when he passed away. The last one I talked with him, when I called up the hospital, the nurse there, I said to him, he couldn't talk because he was on a respirator. I said, can he hear me? She said, yes. I said, do me a favor, put the phone next to his head. Mm-hmm. And I was the last one to talk with him, you know.
Sure.
And told him I'll do what I can for him and stuff. He's still my brother. I still love you, and I'll do what I can. And, you know, they called me back, you know, the next morning he died. And so I said to my brother, said, you take care of it and stuff like that, blah, blah, blah. So I said, okay. So I had arranged for his body to be picked up, and he was in a bad way. So I said, well, we're having cremated and that and everything. So the ashes were sent to me. Now, in the house we have now, where I'm talking now, is like an office room. It's a bedroom, but it's turned into an office. Mm-hmm. It's really nice. And I have his ashes in an urn. In here, part of him, right? Mm-hmm. But if I'm screaming, it's quite a bit of ashes. It's not just a little, you know.
Yeah.
And so the rest of his ashes are now in our closet in the same container which he came into. And in front of that is a picture of Christ with the shroud. It actually turns. So if you look one way, you see his picture, his face. And the other part, you see the body mm-hmm. of Christ. And that I have the picture of the priest that I was well friends with, he's passed. I have that there. And that, and I'm thinking, I said, I got a funny thing. I think it's him because we have his ashes here and stuff, you know. And I think that's what it is. I think he's shooting back and forth, you know. whatever, mm-hmm. and keep an eye. But I plan on taking his ashes and when my mother is buried back in New Jersey and stuff, and then put it in there with her, you know.
Sure.
And that, but I have him here, so I felt comfortable with him here, you know.
Very much at peace with him being there.
Yeah, at being here, because, you know, because I don't know, I felt bad, you know, for, you know, sometimes family sometimes can be rough. You know, you have family, you know, how would you feel when your brother dies? And they say to you, oh, well, why don't you just call up and see if you could donate his body to science? Mm. You know, and this is the things I'm getting.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking to myself, there ain't no way I'm doing this.
Yeah.
You know? You know, I take care of what I got to take care of and stuff, and I did that. And even I seen my other two brothers just recently back in New Jersey, the reunion thing that we went to and stuff. They never mentioned him. They never mentioned him at all. I mentioned him.
Sure.
You know, but they get a response. Like I said, there's different things in life that you just find out about and stuff. But, you know, mm-hmm. like I said, you know, going back to the asylum, there's so many things that went on there. Like I said, I never prepared myself to go into something like that. I basically went in there to help people, which I did quite a bit. Which made me feel good.
Yeah.
I left there, times feeling really good, people be happy. I used to get, sometimes some of the patients, when as soon as they heard the cart coming in, they were running, grab the chair, and they want to be the first one.
Yeah.
You know, because I was doing something for them. And I remember one time walking onto a mission ward, and one gentleman was coming around in the morning taking blood. And he was ahead of me. And as he opened the door, I said, I got it. Don't close it. I got it. And so he went ahead of me, and all the patients going, he's here, I'm first. And this poor guy walks in the nursing station. He goes, boy, he goes, I never got this kind of greeting coming before to get blood. This is not for you, it's for him.
Well, you certainly did a lot of good there for probably both the living and the dead. It seems like they really saw you as someone who understood them and was there for them and didn't view it, you know, with this paranormal activity and things as a show or something like that. You were understanding that this is going on. These were living people once, and the living that were there, you cared about. And that's, I mean, it's such an interesting perspective hearing your story of an active location like this while it was an active care facility.
Yeah, because I know, because I enjoyed, like I said, I really enjoyed taking care of them. I missed the job so very much when I had to leave. I had to leave because of because I had a feeling that I was trying to be pushed out.
Yeah.
And what happened was that year in 98, one morning my wife was going to work, and she didn't work that far away, so I took the car. I said to her, well, I'll drop you off. At that morning, the dryer broke down. We just got it from Sears, right? The dryer dies. My daughter goes, Dad, the dryer ain't working. I said, we just got it. It has to work. So I said, I'll take the clothes. You know, when our son was younger then, he was like maybe four or whatever. I said, I'll take the clothes. I'll go to the laundromat. I'll dry them in there. We'll get the laundry thing fixed. It's brand new, you know. And we were there for about 15 minutes, not even that. And we went to the corner and got a hot chocolate and something for him. And when we're stony chair we had sitting that day was right by the front window, right? And mm-hmm. I was waiting for this one girl to get done with the newspaper. And I was sitting there, and my son wanted a hot chocolate. I said, no, it's way too hot. So I went to take a sip out of it. And next thing I know, I'm airborne. You know?
Yeah.
And that was it. And boom. And then I find myself on the floor coming to, looking around, and didn't see my son and what's going on. And what happened was some lady came pulling on up, and it was a rainy morning, like a drizzle, nothing bad, came right through the wall, partial wall,
mm-hmm.
and the glass, hit the chair and the bench thing I was in and sent me flying. And that, you know. And my son, for some unknown reason, some lady seen this coming, had some type of feeling, and called him over. And my son, at that age, he was very helpful. If somebody called for help, he would just run right to them. Mm-hmm. And he went over there, and I said, yeah, you ran away, but you forgot me.
Yeah.
And that was it. I went to the hospital, and I remember there, I had to call a witness to find out what happened. And I said, it's not for a lawsuit. I just want to know what happened. She said, well, the car came through the window, struck you. Your son was already up and gone. You went flying into the machines. You went down. You had hot chocolate all over your face and everything. People were coming up to you. You started to move. You got up and you were looking around. You wore glasses. They were on the ground. Somebody reached over and handed them to you. You're looking for your son. And behind these ladies, your son was there. And he came out. You reached. You got his hand. And you left. Now, the entire front wall now where the glass was is completely open because the lady backed out and parked a car. Mm-hmm. And you went to right through the door. You opened the door, walked out with him, you know.
Yeah.
Opened the door for him, placed him in the car, put the seatbelt on him and that, and you walked to your side, and that was it. You went down like a wet rag. And next thing you know, then the ambulance was there and stuff and took you away.
Wow.
But, yeah, I woke up, and I said, when I was in the hospital there, they had me in there and stuff like that. They ran a few tests, and they said, oh, we want to keep you overnight. I said, no, I'm out of here. I said, I'm getting out of here. Mm-hmm. And they said, no, I'm fine. That's it. You know, and I went back to work because, you know, I didn't want to stop. I felt like, you know, this was out to kill me, and I didn't want to stop. I want to keep on moving.
Yeah.
I didn't want to stop. Went back to work. I was in a lot of pain and stuff like that. They offered me all these little fun things to test. I said, that's okay. At least then at that time, my supervisor was somewhat kind to me and stuff and gave me some breaks here and there and stuff. But I can no longer go into the hair salon and bend over and do somebody's hair or do stuff like that and everything. Mm-hmm. And eventually I left after that, you know, because the back injury was too much.
Sure.
That's what kind of blew it. It's just got too much, the pain and everything and that. So I had to give it up, and I hated it. I hated it because I loved the job. I loved going there, even through the hell I went through. But I liked the patients, mm-hmm. and I missed working with them. And one time before we left, we moved because the coldness of New Jersey was too much for me to handle. And we went back to Arizona. We were going to leave, and so I went back to the asylum to say goodbye to the one lady I worked with and that, and maybe a couple other people. Mm-hmm. And it was hit, and it really hurt me a lot because a lot of the patients were outside at the time and were all running up to me, mm-hmm. you know, and they want to know when I'm coming back to their ward, you know.
Sure.
And I said, well, you know, I said, I'll be seeing you soon because I didn't want to tell them anything, you know.
Yeah.
I'll be seeing you soon. Don't worry about it. Everything will be okay and stuff like that, you know. And I left. I, you know, got back in the car. You know, I broke down, cried a little bit, but then nothing I could do. You know, I said, there was one time there, even when for Christ's sake, even my wife dropped me off one day, and our son was very young, and he in the back of the car in the seat. She dropped me off, and she's pulling up by the ward where I had my office. I told her, I said, don't stare at the patient, whatever you do. You know, just keep on going. Don't stare at them. Go down the hill, back out, right back out to Grove Street, and go do what you got to do. And she's going down this hill, and as she stopped, because the morning shift's coming in, and a lot of cars are coming in, and all of a sudden you could hear this large cracking sound. It was like, you know, something happening. And we're looking, and one of the patients screamed out, he goes, oh my God, and look. And as she pulled away, this massive tree that must have been there for a few hundred years came down.
Oh my God.
Right where the car was. It hit with such a roar. It came down. You know, it scared me. I ran down that hill so fast, and she pulled over to the side and stuff like that. She goes, what in the hell was that? And
yeah.
She got shook up when she seen where it landed. Because it would have hit the car, it would have smashed it to nothing. It took them, like 5 days to cut it apart. That's how big it was. They came in there with chainsaws, the whole nine yards and everything. And I asked the one guy who was the head of the little company doing it. I said, what made that tree come down? Was it termites or stuff like that? He said, no, they have no idea. They have no idea.
Do you think what was there, I mean, obviously there was a lot of things there, but that location, did it want you to stay because it wanted to take over you at some point and kind of bring you into its fold, if you will, or was it more of a positive thing and the energies wanted you there for good? When you look back on that, well, how do you feel?
The patient side, yes. The other side, no. The other side didn't want me there. They wanted me out.
Okay.
You know, it's like I came there, I started making waves.
Yeah.
You know, and that's what they didn't like.
You were there.
I could see it for what was there.
You were there and bringing positivity, and it didn't want positivity.
No. It didn't want that. It didn't want somebody who cared. A lot of people, I'm just, it's sad to say, a lot of people who work there really didn't give a crap.
Yeah.
They could care less. There, it was like, you know, they didn't care about the patients. They just said, all they cared about was like getting their check and going. Mm-hmm. For God's sakes, one time there was a big thing where a lot of people were let go and they were brought back again. They said it was on the third shift they were sleeping and caught sleeping, which is the goddamn truth. They were.
Yeah.
Okay? They would sleep. They would go on 11 o'clock at night. Patients were sedated, ones who need to be. And one or two of the patients would just pack it in and go to sleep. I mean, the attendants. And the other one would sit up and stuff like that, you know. And they would actually sleep, get up in the morning, and guess what? Go to their other job.
Yeah.
They had a waiting list to get on to the third shift.
Because people would just use it basically to get paid to go to sleep and not do their job.
Yeah, because the time you got there, 11 o'clock at night, these patients are already in bed.
Wow.
That's what I'm saying. They're already in bed. They already got their medications. Yeah. They're in bed and stuff like that. They don't wake them up till about, our shift used to start at 7. So we went at 7. They would wake them up like about 6:15, 6:30, in between that area, start moving them, you know, mm-hmm. early in the morning. And that to get them up and everything and then clean them up and get them set for the day and that, you know. And that was it. Come 11 o'clock at night, they were out. 11 until 7, they were gone, you know.
Yeah.
So this is what they used to do. I don't know. But patients were, I mean, some really good guys there. And people and some of the ones they used to talk to and stuff and greet them all the time, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the one patient that was a female patient that I did her hair. She had to be in her 20s, whatever, and I cut her hair for her, you know, was more, you know, courteous than other people were and stuff like that. So I think it was later on when she was only there for, I would say maybe 6 months or something like that, not very long,
mm-hmm.
but she must have had a slight breakdown or whatever. And I remember I was in the hair salon and she came in with her mother, you know, she was leaving. Mm-hmm. And they wanted to hand me something, you know, whatever. And my supervisor was a real piece of work, you know.
Mm-hmm.
There's other things that went on later on. But she said, oh, we can't accept things like this. We can't go on. I said, what a jerk, you know.
Yeah.
And so they left and it had to be about, a few months later on down the road. On our side over there on Ward 13 and in housekeeping, there was a gentleman by the name, I can't use his name, I use it Blue.
Okay.
His name had a color to it, but it was called Mr. Blue. But he said to me, Ron, there's something in your office. I put it in there. You don't mind, do you? I said, no, you no problem whatsoever. So I went in there after I was done that day, and there was a, you know, it was a box there and stuff, and with a letter and stuff on it, and it was a little, when I opened the box thing up, it was like a jack-in-the-box thing, you know?
Yeah.
Like comic thing. And I read the letter and stuff. It was from the girl's mother, and she wanted you to have this, and she died. She committed suicide.
Wow.
So, you know, to put a horrible ending to a day, that was it, you know?
Yeah. That must have taken an emotional toll on you over all the years of all just being surrounded by the death and getting to know these souls that are going through so many things. And you're kind of the sunshine in their day, but then eventually they pass as well.
Yeah, that's true. That's they do. And one of the gentlemen in there one time, when I was on the ward, I was on there and I was, you know, getting everybody rounded up to whoever wanted, because some people didn't need it. They went out in different free time. And I'm looking for one patient. I got his name. I used to have a log. And I'm looking for him. And I said, where is he at? And he said, oh, he's in the room over there. And I said, what? They had a little sick room on the water, so he wasn't feeling well. They would keep him separate from the other patients. Mm-hmm. And I went in and looked in the window, and this was an elderly lady in there with him. And she was cleaning them up, wiping them down, you know. Mm-hmm. And I tapped on the glass, and she got up, and she opened the door. She goes, oh, hi, Ron. I said, yeah. I said, what's going on? She said, oh, he passed. You're sending a not the coroner, but a funeral home to pick him up. Mm-hmm. And she was in there for quite a few years, and this is what a tradition they had back then, that they would clean the body up. You know?
Yeah.
And I said, wow. You know, I said, okay, you know, fine, you know. And then I'm on the ward doing a few more people, and that. Going and shaking my head, that's a shame. He was a really nice guy. And the funeral home, whatever, you know, the hearse pulls up, you know, outside the ward. We open the door, let the guy in, and he comes over, and he, of course, he has his plastic bag and that, and he didn't want to bring the gurney up the staircase and everything, you know. So he goes in the room with somebody else, and they place the body with inside the bag, zip it up and everything. And now it's heavy, so he needs help, you know? And so it had like one, two, three, I still remember the three handles on each side, you know? Mm-hmm. It's like a bag, like a military woman's bag. So I said, okay, I'll help you out with him and stuff. So there's a few of us, you know, got together. It's his last trip out, we'll help him. And so I got the middle part and stuff, and we're walking, you know, and going down the staircase, I kept on feeling on my hand, like in the bag, like tap, 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 you know, and I'm going like that. And I said to him, hold on a minute, you know, he put him on the gurney, which he had, you know, they had that one they put in the hearse and they slide him in. Mm-hmm. They had to lay right by the hearse. So yeah. We put the bag onto that, they would slide him in. I said, hold on a second for a minute there, you know. And I went by and I took the thing. I said, you don't mind, do you? He said, no. And there was nobody around, so we unzipped the top of the bag to expose his face. And I looked at him to make sure, because they kind of scared the hell out of me. I said, this guy's still alive, you know. Mm-hmm. Maybe they called it wrong, you know.
Yeah.
And like that. And he said, no. So I said, okay, well, let him go. I said, that's it. So all they did, I took my thumb as the thing and just made the, on his forehead, the sign of the cross, and let him go, you know.
Yeah.
And I said, it's another one gone. But it's a shame. I mean, these guys used to have so much fun at times. A good time was when I was an attendant on Ward 17, this one nurse. She was really nice. And I said to her one time, I didn't want to sit around. Tenants love to sit around. I said to him, is it okay if I take some of his patients down to the recreation building? Mm-hmm. And she said, sure. Yeah, how many you want? I says, well, if I take 10, how many can I lose? Yeah. They run off because I'm a chaser. So she said, no, take whoever you want to take down. We went down there and they were going to show a movie. They donated this big widescreen TV. It's an older one, you know. And they're playing the CD or whatever, VCR thing back then, of the Wizard of Oz, you know. And I said, oh, my God, I got to sit through this. And the guy who was putting the film on, when Dorothy starts singing Summer of the Rainbow, he comes flying through everybody else singing. I said, oh, dear God. So I said, next time I go down, I'll bring my own tape, you know.
Yeah.
So I went down there this later time. And it was a cloudy day out and stuff. And I said, who wants to go down? Because they can go down and have cigarettes and soda and stuff down there, you know. So I had a bunch of them come down. You know, some attendants went down too. I said, hey, this is great. We go down there. And I told the one guy, he said, oh, we get into the music. I said, no musicals. No. I said, no. Let's have some fun. It's a crappy day out. I gave him a tape. And he put it in, you know. And the patients suddenly all got their attention. They all stayed there. And they all loved it. And the movie that I put in and gave him was Young Frankenstein.
Okay.
You know, and they're watching that, and they're having a great time.
Yeah.
You know, laughing. and everything. And the funniest part, though, is when with the brain, when he came back with the brain, he said, Abby something, right? Mm-hmm. Abby something. He goes, Abby normal? You mean Abby? When he said Abby normal brain, they're all pointing at each other. They got your brain. And I mean, I was laughing at stuff, but I mean, I had a really good time. They were funny as hell. I mean, they enjoyed it. They laughed their asses off. They had a good time, you know, for a change, you know.
Yeah.
And that. And the one guy wasn't too happy about it. Yeah. I said, yeah, but at least they had a good time. You know, I was looking out for them.
That wraps up the second part of our conversation with Ronald. A big thank you to him for spending the time and sharing all of those stories with us. We greatly appreciate it. And thanks to you for being a supporter of the show and helping to keep us on the air. We would not exist without it. Until next time, for The Grave Talks, I'm Tony Bruschi. Thanks for listening.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
This time of year, most of us are checking off our holiday gift lists. But identity thieves have lists too, and your personal information might be on them. Protect your identity with LifeLock. LifeLock monitors millions of data points every second and alerts you to threats you could miss. If your identity is stolen, LifeLock will fix it, guaranteed, or your money back. Make this season about joy, not identity theft, with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year at LifeLock.com/iHeart. Terms apply.